right. Well, good evening, everyone. Brian Post here once again for your monthly Inner Circle call. And joining me this evening once again is the very distinguished Dr. Marcy Axness. Good evening, Dr. Marcy.
Good evening. Hello, everybody. Nice to be with you.
Perfect. So I got the notice of the Inner Circle call out a little bit late. Usually I send it out on Fridays, and today we send it out today. So folks may be slow to join this evening, or they may just be waiting for the recording. But nevertheless, I did have several questions that came in, so I'm going to be sure to address those. But before we do that, I'm going to talk just a little bit about something that is pressing on my heart and my mind about parenting. And if you have any questions or any comments or any feedback, just push *6 on your phone. And Dr. Marcy, at any time you would like to chime in, all you got to do is say, hey, and then chime in.
Okay.
So that being said, one of the things I've been studying a lot lately is the idea of, and not even an idea, so much of an idea as there's a science, and the science is in the area of physics, but as it speaks more directly to us, it is the nature of vibration in relationship, and also the law of attraction. And I was reading, I was listening to an audio program just the other day, and the individual was talking about the law of attraction. And some of you may be familiar with the law of attraction from the movie that came out as a big smash, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago called The Secret, where they talked a lot about the law of attraction and basically what you think and what you focus on is what comes to you. Well, as I was listening to this audio program, he started talking about the law of attraction being a law and saying that it was a senior law and that it was a law that actually even takes precedence over the law of gravity. And it was interesting because I had not put, even though I've heard, you know, basically the only way you hear it, the law of attraction is in the context of the law of attraction. But I didn't realize, it wasn't registering to me exactly what that meant, that this is actually a physical law of nature, that it is considered to be in the utmost of the word, a truth. Just like if you throw something up, it must come down, which is the law of gravity. The law of attraction essentially says that which you focus on the most, that which you spend the most time thinking about, that which generates the majority of your feelings, is that which is going to come true in your life, and it's that which is going to be created in your life. It is an irrefutable law. It happens irregardless, and if we think about it from the context of right now in this moment, then essentially the law of attraction says that everything we are experiencing right now, everything that we are challenged by, everything that we are excited by, everything that moves us on the emotional level, on the psychological level, on the spiritual level, is in fact due to the law of attraction. Now, when I grasp that, and I, you know, throughout my career, I've had these light bulb moments that they're just like, oh my gosh, this is huge. When I think about that, and I think about that from the perspective of responsibility, because essentially, I am responsible at every level for what is attracted into my life, good or bad. And I know that historically, just in some of the programs I've studied and listened to and some of the people I've talked to over the years, it's always the first response is, so you're saying that I attracted this cancer into my body. You know, people always want to go to the extreme. You know, the person who has cancer, you're saying they attracted that into their body. And I don't think anyone ever wants to say, well, yes, but on so many levels, could that not be true?
And if we're willing to take can I jump in?
Go ahead.
I just want to jump in and say that, cancer is many, 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 many steps down the line in a whole series of processes inside the body that began with an imbalance.
Yes.
And that we attract all the time by thinking imbalance.
All the time. And see, and the significance of that is that the cancer is an outcome to a process which may have been systematically occurring. And I don't want to stay on cancer because I just feel like it's just the extreme. But it's the outcome of a process that has systematically occurred over the course and span of one's life. But if we think about that, you know, if we think about our ability, our willingness, or our resistance to take a responsibility to the things that have been attracted into our lives, you know, it's very powerful. And, you know, I've got a person I know, an associate, I would almost say that she's a friend, someone I have an understanding of and have spent a small amount of time with, and she's got cancer. And I questioned for myself, because my father passed away from cancer 8 years ago, and I questioned for myself, if we know things like there's a theory, an anti-cancer theory, it's called Alkalize or Die, is a book called Alkalize or Die. If we know that things like eating broccoli actually make cancer, what's the word? Can't think of what's the
remission.
I don't know if it makes it if it creates, but it's similar to that. It's like it sends cancer into remittance. It basically prevents the body. It prevents the cancer from being able to grow. Is the theory. If we know that things like that, which come from eating broccoli, you know, broccoli is considered a superfood. So if you have cancer, if you fear getting cancer, if you want to live in a way that manifests health and happiness and abundance in your life, then why wouldn't you eat broccoli every day? And I think about my friend who has cancer, who eats all kinds of junk food every day. And at the same time, you know, tries to take all these health supplements and do all these alternative practices, but just at a very basic level. One of my mentors, who's now passed away, his name is Jim Rohn. He's known as America's business philosopher while he was alive. But one of the things he used to always say in his talks is, what if an apple a day keeps the doctor away? The saying is not, what if a Snickers a day keeps the doctor away? It's, what if an apple a day really does keep the doctor away? Then why would we not eat an apple a day? And it's because of the condition thought processes that we have. It's the processes of conditioning. It's the processes of habits that we get locked into that affect our very thoughts. They affect our very feelings. They affect our very vibration of life. And so it becomes so hard to change what we're focusing on, even though we continue to see it over and over again. And as we continue to see it over and over again, guess what we continue to focus on? We continue to focus on what we see. And then we wonder why we keep seeing it. It's because we continue to focus on it. And we continue to give it energy, and we continue to allow it to align with our vibration. So I think I could probably go on an enormous tangent with this, and I'm probably going to at some level. I'm going to try to regulate myself a little bit. But I start thinking about families who struggle with children. I start thinking about it, and actually a perfect example. And you all know I always love sharing personal examples from my own life. A phenomenal example is what's going on with my 20, almost soon to become December, my 21-year-old adopted son, Kevin. Kevin, most of you know, he grew up on the streets until he was 14. Then he came to the United States. He was in residential treatment and group home after group home, foster homes. And eventually he ended up in our group home in Virginia Beach. And was, you know, successful by all means, by all in comparison to what he had been through. And so when we got ready to shut down the group home, Kevin didn't have anywhere to go. So instead of him going to a group home, he came with us to Oklahoma, thereby becoming our adopted son and living with us. And so Kevin's, you know, spent a couple, you know, been raising Kevin for four years now, almost 5 years. So Kevin wanted to go to Oregon, and he came to me one day and he said, you know, I want to go to Oregon. He said, I'm going to Oregon. And he said that he had a friend out there who was going to help him get a job, who's going to give him a place to stay. And I said, well, that sounds really good. I said, how do you know this person? He said, well, I helped this person, you know, when they were here, I helped him to, you know, I kept some of his stuff for him and blah, blah, blah. I said, okay. And so I got kind of excited for him. You know, first of all, I was glad he was venturing out, even though he said he was really leaving because some guys here in town were picking on him because he'd been hitting on their girlfriends or what have you. And I said, okay, here's what I'll do. I'll get your ticket. I'm going to get you a one-way ticket. But I'll buy you a ticket because I don't want you hitchhiking all the way across the country to try to get to Oregon. So I'll buy you a one-way ticket, but I want you to make sure. I said, Kevin, look at me. I'm sitting in front of the computer. I said, Kevin, look at me. Make sure that you understand that when you get to Oregon, you are across the country. You don't know anyone there. Right now you don't have a place to stay. And if this person flakes out on you, then you're essentially, this is my terminology, ass out. So you're not going to have anyone. So you make sure that this guy is going to do what he says he's going to do. So Kevin gets on his cell phone. He goes outside. He comes back. He says, yeah. Guy says it's good. I said, all right, Kevin, I'm buying this ticket. But I promise you, if you get out there and this falls through, don't call me because I'm not going to buy you a ticket back. You're going to figure it out. So Kevin gets on the bus. He goes to Oregon, he travels 3 days, he gets there, he calls me, you know, every day he calls me, work tells me where he's at, and he's there. So finally he calls me on the arrival day, he tells me that he's landed, and I said, awesome, you know, I'm so excited for you, I'm glad. I said, did your friend come and pick you up? And he said, no, he screwed me. And I was like, oh my gosh. I said, that's terrible. He said, yep, you were right. And I said, well, here's what you need to do. You need to find a homeless shelter because there you can have shelter and you can get something to eat. I said, and then you need to figure out how to get a job so you can get the money to come back because I'm not going to pay for you to get a ticket back. You're going to have to figure this one out. And he said, okay. And about a week later, maybe a few days later, he texted me and he asked me if I'd pay his $40 phone bill one more time. And I thought about it. And I said, you know what, Kevin? It's been impossible for you to hear anything I've had to say so often. And I love you, but no, I'm not going to pay for your phone bill. You're going to have to figure this one out. And he said, okay. And so, you know, every day that goes by, I think about Kevin. Christy asked about Kevin. Marley, not so much. But every day I think about him. And then the other day, a couple of days ago, I had a dream about him. Well, people call me on my cell phone. I don't, the number's not, you know, their names aren't associated with the number on my cell phone. So it goes to voicemail, and I check my cell phone messages maybe once a week at best. So I had a phone call from Kevin 2 weeks ago. So I checked my phone messages, and it's Kevin, and he's telling me, hey, Brian, he says, I found a job at this really cool place. He said, I can eat here. I can snowboard. He said, it's pretty good, and I'll call you back later. And so I was really excited because I had just 2 nights ago had a dream about Kevin, and I told Marley this. You know, he walked in the house, and he was giving her a hug. And so I was happy, and so I called today, and I asked if Kevin Diaz was there, and the lady sent me to the HR person, and I said, you know, Kevin Diaz had called me, he's my adopted son, and I was hoping I could leave a message for him or something. She said, well, you can't do that because he resigned yesterday. And I thought, oh, that's so interesting. That is so interesting. And I don't know why he resigned. I don't know the circumstances. I talked to Christy. I tell her probably one or two things. One, he either got his feelings hurt and puffed up and walked off, or two, he got paid and he had enough money to get a bus ticket to come back home. And so, you know, it's one of those two things. But my point in telling that story is that my focus for so many years with Kevin, my energy for so many years with Kevin was not on attracting his ability to take care of himself or to be successful, but it was attracting my need for him to be dependent on me. Not that I consciously thought about it, but in every action I took with him, it was always fostering his dependence on me. You know, whether it was giving him a place to live, whether it was paying for his cell phone, you know, doing all the things that parents normally do for children, but not focused on attracting into his life the ability to be independent and to take care of himself. And so once I finally gave up the need for him to be dependent on me, and I started thinking positively about, you know, he's going to figure this out and he's going to have some tough experiences, but it's going to be good for him. You know, things are shifting. And yes, it is very scary to trust. And those of you who have small children, no, you can't use this example for your 8-year-old kid who says they're going to run away. But I want you to understand kind of the context and kind of the premise is, as long as you're focusing on the negative, there's no room for the positive. As long as you're focusing on the negative, that's all you're going to see. And it actually works at the level of the brain. Some of you heard me talk about this before. The amygdala, your brain's fear receptor, all it does is senses threat. And so as soon as it senses a threat, it immediately starts to create the energy of fear. It immediately starts to release stress hormones, which create the emotion of fear, which is a fear-based, survival-based energy. And so what the amygdala does is it increases its focus on the negative. So pretty soon all it can see is negative. All it's looking for is negative. It's in survival. And then over time, over a period of conditioning, all you can see is negative. Even when things are going good or even when things are going better, all you can see is negative. And so what happens is you start to vibrate your physical body, because all a cell is, and we're made up of trillions of them, all a cell is a vibration pattern. And so you start to vibrate this energy of survival. You start to vibrate this energy of fear. So your relationships become mired in this experience of fear. Your physical body becomes this experience of fear. Your thoughts become this experience of fear. Your emotions are this experience of fear. So your very relationships are rooted in this experience of fear, and it becomes conditioned. And as it becomes conditioned, all it can do is grow. There's no space for anything else. And it becomes so habitual, it becomes so conditioned that it's hard to see anything else. And so when you start thinking about the law of attraction and you start thinking about what we focus on is what becomes, then you have to ask yourself, how can I start to reframe the negative behaviors that I'm seeing from my children, the negative feelings that I'm having in myself, the negative dynamics of our relationship? How can I start to reframe that in a way that can bring a different vibration to it so that I can begin changing this conditioning? Because as long as you see it as negative, that's what it's always going to be. It's never going to be anything else but negative. So how can you start to reframe that, not just at a cognitive in a cognitive manner, but also at an emotional level? How can you start to reframe that so you can actually see it in a way that helps you to generate a different vibration? Because until you change that vibration, and that really is the crux. It's so interesting because if you get right down to it, that's kind of at the crux of love-based parenting, or as Dr. Marcy calls it, parenting for peace. Is that the crux is a change in your very vibration, the very vibration, interaction that you have with your child. That's at the crux of it. And so if you can't change the vibration, then nothing really is ever going to change. You can change the behavior, and I've said this for years and years, you can change the behavior by becoming more threatening, by becoming more forceful, by increasing the punishment. But you're not changing the actual vibration. You're actually reinforcing it. And as you're reinforcing it, the behavior itself may change, but it's just going to resurface in some other more intense way. And so that just really, it really settled me in a way that I've started to really think about that in all natures of my relationship, in all natures of my relationships, whether it's personal, whether it's business, whether it's spiritual, every relationship. You know, what am I vibrating in, and what am I focusing on? And what am I seeing in my reality? And as I'm seeing things in my reality, how can I reframe that? And just have to give you an example about how I reframe that. I think about having a really overwhelming day where I have so much stuff going on from a business perspective. You know, the first thing I want to do is get stressed out. And when I get stressed out, I want to try to go faster. And as I try to go faster, I get less done because I'm creating more stress and I'm not thinking as clear as I need to be. Instead of slowing down for a minute and reframing it and saying that this overwhelm that I'm experiencing right now is the first indicators of a significant breakthrough that I'm about to have. So instead of feeling overwhelmed, I need to start getting excited. Because as I can get excited, I actually start to change my vibration, and that the overwhelm becomes less. It becomes less overwhelm, and it becomes more excitement. And as it becomes more excitement, I start to generate more positive feelings. And as I start to generate more positive feelings, I start to move back within my window of tolerance, back within my ability to be regulated. As I move back in my ability to be regulated, I start to think more clearly, and I start to get more focused, and I start to become more productive. You know, so this morning, as I'm talking to Christy about how overwhelmed I'm feeling with all these new projects I'm taking on, she reminds me of what Deepak Chopra said once in an audio program we were listening to about his most important work being, you know, he wakes up in the morning, he meditates for an hour, then he writes for an hour, then he exercises for an hour, and then his day is done. His most important work is done. She said, your most important work isn't all the running around and the sense of urgency to get all this stuff done. That's not your important work. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that's so true. That's so true, because my most important work for me has always been first thing in the morning. It's always been when I can get quiet. It's always been when I can focus on my goals. It's always been when I can meditate on what it is that I want to happen in my life. When I can plan my day, that's when I'm always the most productive. That's when I always feel the most balanced. I feel the most complete. And so I ask you all this question. How many of you, you know that you have these ongoing challenges that your children present, first and foremost for you, and I've always told you that, you know, children have these challenges for our own growth and understanding. I believe that. I believe that every challenge a child presents to us is for us more than it is for them. So how many of you have spent, you know, 10 minutes in the morning or 10 minutes in the evening before you go to bed thinking about what you're gaining from your child's behaviors? Thinking about what vibration are you bringing to your child's life? What vibration are you bringing in your relationship with your child? How many of you have considered that perhaps that is the most important work that you could be doing, more so than anything else? You know, it's like I say sometimes it's better to do nothing than something. Sometimes it's better to do nothing than something. Because sometimes nothing is exactly what needs to happen in order for you to get to a space, for you to change your vibration in the dynamic. See, a lot of times we believe that doing nothing is not doing anything. See, we believe that getting quiet, we believe that getting focused, we believe that spending the time to think, to be clear about what we're bringing into life and bringing into our relationships with our spouses, with our children, with our partners, with our friends, we believe that that's not doing anything. When in reality, doing nothing is oftentimes everything you need to be doing. Because that is the vibration that you're changing, the vibration you're bringing into the relationship. And that is, and folks, that's the most basic, level. That is at our cellular state. That is at the most basic level. You know, and I gave up years and years ago really feeling this desire and the urge and the need to teach tools and techniques. And so many of you get that. You understand that from me. You understand that, you know, the tools and the techniques, they're there. You know, there's infinite tools or infinite techniques that you can use for any given situation, but none of it is relevant if you don't have the understanding. If you don't have the understanding which guides you, which becomes the principles by which you operate with your child and build the relationship and establish what it is that you hope to establish, you know, as you work towards fulfilling your dreams and your goals for yourself and for your children. It's the understanding. And so as we're thinking about the understanding, we're thinking about the law of attraction, we think about vibrations, I'm talking about the most basic level of your being, at the most basic, at square one, what's going on? What are you bringing into the dynamics of your family? What are you bringing into the dynamics of your relationship with your child at square one? And as you look at square one, here's what I'm going to challenge you with. Here's what I'm going to encourage you with. And here's what I want to inspire you to be able to do. Take responsibility for what you're bringing into square one. Take responsibility right there. Stop focusing on everything else and take responsibility right there at square one. Because see, what we want to do is we want to jump to square two or square three or four or five. That's where our kids and their behaviors are at. But that's the wrong place to be because you haven't spent the time at square one, which creates the foundation for everything else. So what are you vibrating? You know, what are you vibrating in those moments when you feel challenged? Is it love or is it fear? Very basic, very basic. But when you jump over that, when you try to skip over that because you want that behavior to go away, then you're operating from the foundation of your amygdala, which is operating from the foundation of stress and fear. And as long as you're operating from the foundation of stress and fear, that's all you're ever going to be creating. Is stress and fear. Because that's all the amygdala can see, is stress and fear. So ask yourself, how can I take responsibility for square one? To really look at and consider and ponder and meditate and pray on what it is that I'm bringing right there. What it is that I am inducing right there at that square. How can I take responsibility for that? And if I can't take responsibility for that, how about you slow down everything else that you're trying to fix, everything else that you're trying to do? What if you slow down on all of that until you feel really good about where you're at square one? And I know because, see, fear is going to immediately freak you out and make you feel, I can't just slow down. I can't just say anything because something bad's going to happen. Listen to that. Listen to what your vibration is. Listen to what your dominant vibration is. Listen to what you're attracting. what you're saying in that statement is I can't slow down and focus on changing my vibration at the most basic level because I'm so afraid of what's going to happen in the future. You know, the other thing Deepak Chopra says that you've heard me say in my lectures is that we cannot prevent the future from happening, but we can influence it from the present. We cannot prevent the future from happening, but from the present, we can influence what the future looks like. And I'm convinced that so many times in parenting, the reason we get the outcomes that we do with our children is because of what we focused on, what we influenced when they were younger. Right? I don't think anyone can argue that. I was talking to another friend tonight who's got an 8-year-old son, and she said that she was driving with one of her friends, and the son was asked how school was today, and he said, oh, it wasn't a very good day. And the friend said, oh, that's okay. You're going to hate school. I hated school. You just got to get through it, and then you're going to get a job, and you're going to hate it. You're going to hate your job. And so she said, you know, it kind of caught her off guard. She didn't really say anything, but then she got to the car dealership and where they were headed, and he was looking at this car, and he told the salesman he really liked this car, and the salesman said, you know, as soon as you get out of school and you get a job, then you could buy this car. You can get the money and buy this car. And he said, oh, no, I'm just going to be a grandpa. I'm not going to work. This 8-year-old had taken, you just got to get through school. You're going to hate it anyway. You just got to get through. You're just going to have a job. You're going to hate it anyway. He just jumped from being 8 to being a grandpa with grandkids. And not working. Then that's when he was going to get his car. That's just fascinating how children's brains work. But see, that's a vibration. We created that vibration. That adult created that vibration for him that planted a seed, that planted the inability for him to look forward to learning in school, the inability for him to look forward to getting a job and working or owning his own business. And jumped him straight ahead to being a grandpa. So that's my little spiel on the law of attraction. And I hope that is beneficial and useful for you as you go into the next moment and hours with your children or in your relationships. Dr. Marcy, you have anything you'd like to add?
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, that was inspiring. It was like a sermon. I loved it. I would love to add that sort of the what I call the mainspring of my book, Parenting for Peace, is the basic biological reality that, you know, and this just goes exactly with what you're saying. I'm just going to maybe offer it from a slightly different angle because sometimes, you know, different people are able to grasp it in different ways. At every moment, beginning at the level of our cells and going throughout, you know, throughout our body, and then it applies to us as individuals, to families, to, you know, groups of people, to nations, we are always either in growth mode or in protection mode.
There you go.
Which correlates to, you know, your love or fear thing. And that is an absolute reality that drills right down to the cellular level. And, you know, the whole point of my book really is, you know, if we're going to change the world, we have to raise a generation of people who have brain circuitry that is wired optimally. Well, the way to curtail brain development, especially in these social intelligent areas of the prefrontal lobes, is to have cortisol running all the time, which is what happens when we are in that protection mode, when we detect stress. It can either be very overt or it can be very subtle. This is why standardized testing, I think, is a catastrophe. This is why true learning doesn't happen under threat of, you know, testing or threat of punishment or, you know. So here's what I throw out to audiences as a tool, you know, to kind of crystallize this idea. basically, and I've had clients say to me, you know, when everything else is melting down and falling apart, and any techniques I've thought of, you know, you've told me before, I can't remember, this I can always remember. And here it is. To ask yourself the question, is this communication I'm about to have with my child, is this action I'm about to take with my child, going to foster growth mode or protection mode in my child and in myself? And that's a question that is fruitful to use with pretty much everything.
Yes, that's a life question.
It is a life question. And, you know, you touched on meditation. That's another tool that I really, I call it one of my, one of the five big bang parenting tools. You know, it's a tool that you get a lot of bang for your buck from. And it might not seem intuitive, you know, it seems counterintuitive. Well, what is meditation going to do for my parenting? Everything. You know, yes, it changes your vibration. One of the things that meditation does, it's sort of a little hidden secret bonus for parents, that is that it lets you answer the following question, yes. And that is, do I, as a parent, have mastery over something as basic as the flow of my own thoughts? When you can answer yes to that and really mean it, which is what meditation cultivates, this is a level of self-possession that your child picks up on wordlessly in you. A whole layer of discipline issues just fall away. Don't even come up, because there is this level of respect for you, of trust in you, in them, that is so deep and so implicit and so unwavering that there's just a whole raft of discipline stuff that just never even comes up. I am telling you, a lot of discipline issues, a lot of quote-unquote misbehavior, especially in the younger child, I believe happens because they're testing to see if we're really leaders. Can I really trust you to stand firm when I push this edge? And of course they want more than anything for you, you know, for the answer to be yes. But when we're in that fear place, when we're, you know, when we're waiting for the other shoe to drop, I mean, this is something I have found that is really kind of epidemic in parents, is we're not assuming that our child is going to be able to comply with whatever our next request is. We're waiting for that other shoe to drop. We're waiting for the battle. We're waiting for the power struggle. And that's what we're holding in our minds. And that gets back to the power of attraction.
That's excellent.
I actually just, funny timing, I just unveiled, like, day before yesterday, my first audio coaching session, my most popular coaching session. I put it on audio. It's called Calm Authority for Mothers. I've got fathers coming in a couple of weeks, but Calm Authority for Mothers. And it basically, this is exactly what it's about. This is exactly what it's about cultivating. Right down to the meditation. I have guided meditation, and I really harness the power of our imagination to reframe that stuff, to change our vibration.
And, you know, I want to expand on that for people, and I don't think it's so much, you know, my inner circle group, but meditation for some can mean prayer for others. know, the underlying premise and energy is the same, is getting quiet.
Yeah.
Quieting your mind to be able to listen.
Right. I would say contemplative prayer, yes. I mean, for some people, prayer is closing their eyes and, you know, a stream of concerns and fears, which, you know, isn't really going to make shift this too much. You know, or it's...
Yeah, unless they're asking God for help. You know, they can have a stream of anxiety and fears, and then they could be asking for, you know, comfort and security and reassurance.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm just thinking from the perspective of, you know, what people are usually seeking in their prayer is soothing at so many levels.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would never discourage prayer. Prayer is powerful. I would just encourage people to leave as much time for listening,
yes,
as they do in expressing. You know, I mean,
I've often heard it said that prayer
is us talking to God and meditation is us listening back.
Nice. I like that. Absolutely.
And then there is also another really powerful way to cultivate this level of, you know, of presence. These are what I call presence practices, and presence is the number one principle out of the seven in my book. Another really powerful way to cultivate it is mindfulness practice.
Yes.
Which sounds so simple, but you just try it. Everybody, I would love you to try taking one complete shower in complete mindfulness. It's almost impossible. We are so used to getting into the shower, and then sort of in our mind we go off into rehearsing the day that's coming or replaying the day yesterday, you know, thinking about this meeting that we have to have that's maybe going to be difficult, you know, any one of a number of things. Meanwhile, we are having one of the most pleasurable experiences that would be like a miracle to, you know, 90% of the world's population, or maybe I have my percentage off, but there's a great deal of the world's population for whom a shower would be a transcendent experience. And yet we check out.
I would say try it for 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, forget the whole shower.
For 2 minutes, absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, do it while you're shampooing, and just basically the idea of mindfulness, and you can do this in the shower, you can do this when you're cutting the carrots for the soup, you can do this with anything, and that is bring your entire present, your entire self, physically, mentally, emotionally, attentionally, to what you're doing. All of you is there. Not one part of you is split off somewhere else. And, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese monk, he wrote the classic landmark book on this probably 20 years ago, teeny little skinny book called The Miracle of Mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have, you know, brain science to show that this is true.
Exactly.
Yeah, Jeffrey Schwartz at UCLA, he developed a protocol, the first in the world, that cured, or, you know, that brought significant relief. I mean, cure, I don't know if the word cure is used, but brought these people into normal range, clinically, seriously diagnosed with OCD. I mean, people, you know, OCD is always a handy punchline. Oh, he's so OCD. You know, OCD is so not a joking matter. It's such a prison for people who have it. And basically just through mindfulness practice, because he's not only a psychiatrist, Jeffrey Schwartz, he is a Buddhist meditator for many, 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 many years. And anyway, it's quite a fascinating book he wrote called The Mind and the Brain, in which he talks about that and many, many other things.
Well, I want to mention to people again, the author you mentioned before, Schwartz, is Thich Nhat Hanh. and that's Thich Nhat Hanh, Thich Nhat Hanh. And my favorite of his books is called Being Present. Being Peace. That's the first one of his books I ever read, and I read that book 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's one of my favorites. But yeah, you mentioned what was the book you mentioned?
Jeff.
Yeah.
Oh, the book that I mentioned was The Miracle of Mindfulness.
Right.
Yeah, it's a beautiful primer in that practice.
Excellent reading. Absolutely.
And you know, hey, we're in the digital age. All you have to do is Google mindfulness and or meditation. You can come up with guidelines anywhere.
Absolutely. I'd like to go ahead and tie into the question that came in from Catherine. And I'll let you go ahead and let you pick up on this. It says, why is it that when my boys act up due to boredom during car journeys or other times they get so stressed inside, they do not react, I keep my voice calm, and eventually it all calms down. Then I come away and I'm really upset and exhausted. Why can't I learn to accept it for what it is and not feel upset by it? What should I focus on other than breathing and if need be removing myself if I feel too overwhelmed? I think sometimes my expectation of them is not realistic because they really are doing well, all things considered. Any advice?
Well, this ties in really well with what we're talking about. First of all, is Catherine on the call?
Catherine, I don't think Catherine's on the call tonight. Star 6, if you are. Yeah, I don't see her so far.
Okay, well, you know, this is a really such a universal experience. I really went through this, especially with my daughter, which was a clue for me. When she would have any kind of upset, it just really got to me. And so what I came to realize over the years was, you know, when anything, whether it's with our children or other individuals in any kind of relational situation, when something really gets to us, that's a big flag for us. You know, it's a big red pointing arrow, you know. Look here. Big clue here. And I know for myself, you know, it was about my own history of my girlhood when I was her age and when I was having upset. The
mm-hmm.
famous child psychologist Eric Erickson said, when we spend a lot of time with a child of a certain age, our own unresolved material from that age will come right up to be reckoned with. And this is really one of the biggest landmines of parents.
Wait. Say that again, slowly, because that
yes,
is so profound.
Right. Yes. When we spent a lot of time with a child of a certain age, our own issues from that age in our own lives that haven't been resolved, that have sort of just remained untouched, will come right up to be reckoned with.
Right, to be reckoned with. I like that.
And this is a parenting landmine. Because first of all, very few people talk about it, so we're not really, you know, we're kind of blindsided by it, and we typically don't know what it is. This distress that arises in us, and it can come in many different forms. I think one of the most common forms is anger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure you've shared with your inner circle people before that. You know, usually mad is really sad. Mad is usually a covering up for sad. And so I had to really just, you know, know, just sit with it and, you know, try to have some self-compassion. And I think Catherine sounds like she did, was doing all the right things. You breathe, you don't sort of attach and, you know, seize into that and go with it. We try to engage that part of us that's the witness that can remain, sort of have a healthy distance. And again, I mean, I hate to come back to this, but this guided imagery in Calm Authority for Parents is exactly about this. It takes us back to our own relationship with our own primary parent, lets us begin to reconceive that using the power of our imaginations.
Wait, Doc. You said I hate to come back to it, and I just got to say, don't hate to come back to it. Love to come back to it.
Well, you know, yes, but I don't want to sound like an advertisement or a commercial,
I don't care. It is an important resource, and I want you all to be hearing what is being offered is, you know, something that someone I consider to be an esteemed colleague and very knowledgeable and just right there, you know, in the flow of what has to happen when it comes to parenting, is offering you an insight, an opportunity to you know.
Yeah, it's a resource, you know.
A resource, absolutely.
And I've had, you know, and I developed it over years of working, you know, with clients face-to-face, and I developed this guided imagery. When I saw the epidemic of...
Where is it available?
If they go to my website, parentingforpeace.com.
Okay, great.
And basically right on the homepage, it's about the fourth slide that comes up on the slider on the homepage, and then they can click and find it from there, or they can find it in the store as well.
Cool.
But, you know, there's an epidemic out there of what you were talking about earlier, Brian, of what I call scared parenting. I actually am going to put up a blog soon about scared parenting. And there's a variety of reasons for it, but one of the three main reasons is a lack of confidence in parents. And so this is what I really developed this to address. And I've had clients just feel that it, you know, kind of transformed their parenting, because what does it do? It allows us to go in at that quantum level. You know, you started with the word quantum, or, you know, you talked about quantum physics, and, you know, this idea of the power of attraction, the reality of the law of attraction. For example, elite athletes have known this forever. They have known that our brain and our nervous system don't distinguish between what we imagine and what we actually do. They've known this at the level of physical training for decades. There was a classic piece of research where they had basketball players practice free throws. You know, there were three groups. One group practiced the free throws. One group just lay down in an alpha state, a relaxed state, and imagined throwing free throws, every single one of them successfully. And then there was a control group that just lay down and relaxed but didn't do anything different. And it was the imagining group whose you know, free throw number went up, because they had been successful on every throw as opposed to the physically practicing ones. My whole point here is that we have such a powerful tool in our own imaginations, for good or for ill, by the way.
Mm.
You know, our attitudes, the thoughts we hold in our mind, are basically what we're ordering up from the grand menu of life. So it's, you know, for example, when you're dog training, they tell you, don't tell the dog, get off the sofa, get off the sofa, get off the sofa. You tell the dog, get on the floor. Well, that's so simple. That's, you know, that's a directly relates to a basic parenting principle, which is don't tell kids what they can't do. Tell them what they may do. And especially for young children, that word may is like a magic word. You may hang your coat up now. Oh, my gosh, it makes it sound like a great privilege that they are, you know, get to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all in the attitude of the parent.
Mm. It reminds me of my our old cat, our one and only cat in my entire life. His name was Woody, and Woody was would jump up to the table of my friend Ann Maxwell, who also is just a phenomenal child family play therapist. She was over at the house one evening, and she said, "You just have to pick him up and tell him no, and put him on the floor." And I thought, okay. So Woody would jump on the table, and I'd say, "Woody, no," and I'd put him on the floor. And he'd jump on the table. I'd say, "Woody, no," and I'd put him on the floor. And eventually it'd get to the point to where Woody would jump on the table, and I'd say, "Woody," and he'd jump off of the table.
Yeah.
And it just took that repetition. That repetition, I mean, it's all a part of the process.
Well, the parenting kind of discipline mantra that I have parents, you know, learn and imprint in their brains, again, especially for the young child, because all of this is so much easier when you start young. Imitation, redirection, habituation.
Yeah, I love that little triage, that little parenting triage.
Yeah. Awesome. First and foremost, be worthy of your child's unquestioning imitation. You know, if you can get past that one without fainting, more power to you. But, yeah, imitation, the most powerful form of teaching. And then redirection. The young child, if they're heading towards that lamp they're not supposed to touch, or they're heading towards whatever that you've told them a million times, stop telling them a million times. Your words are pretty much wasted. The young child is a physical sensory motor creature. They're really not built to do a lot of high-level thinking. We ask them to their great stress, by the way, but that's a whole other show. We can talk about that on another hour, how the various ways we stress our children in a culturally sanctioned way.
Now,
but
let me ask you something, Dr. Marcy. Let me interrupt real quick. You say the young child. What age are you speaking up to when you say that?
When I say young child, I mean up to around 7.
Okay,
you know,
so
7, you know, it's slightly individual. You know, each child is slightly different, but roughly around 7 is when there's a major change in neural functioning. A whole new aspect of the brain comes online. It's what has been called the age of reason.
You know, that's
when it's appropriate to ask children to do academic work and, you know, all this. But like I said, that's a whole other show. And
right.
And that would be great to do a show on that, I think. I mean, we're not doing a show, but a call.
Yeah.
I'm so used to doing radio interviews.
Right. My thought about that is trauma changes all of that. Trauma changes that whole normal brain development sequelae.
Yes,
so
it certainly does.
So that you could be talking about a chronologically 14-year-old who has not yet achieved that 7 to 8-year-old benchmark.
Yeah, that's true.
Because see that's one of my premises for parents is, you know, and what Bruce Perry says, in times of stress we revert to our developmental zones of comfort.
Right, and there's also a little bit of a flip piece there that very often what trauma does is force a premature, prematurely cognitively savvy child. Does that make sense?
Of course. Yeah. Absolutely.
Right, but it's not in an organic way. So just to finish out that triage so that anybody who was really wanting that feels complete.
Sure.
Redirection is, you know, if the kid's heading towards something they're not supposed to, you redirect them very often without any words. You know, don't need to tell them for the 17th time, right? Just redirection in that calm, authoritative, confident way. Waldorf kindergarten teachers are masters at this. Just gently taking them by the shoulder. We're going over here now. You might sing a little song. And then the third is habituation. The more you do it, and that's this, your story with Woody is a perfect example, habituation. The more that a child knows that, you know, rhythm is one of the seven principles in my book as well. The more a young child knows this is when we eat, this is when we have breakfast, this is when we nap, Tuesdays we go to the farmer's market. The more they can have this wonderful consistency and predictability of routine, again, the less quote-unquote discipline issues you're going to have, because it just becomes like a wonderfully, you know, ticking clock, like a rhythmic tide. And this, again, is straight out of Bruce Perry's playbook.
Mm-hmm. It's excellent. And what I want all of my inner circle members to hear is that every step that Dr. Marcy just went over, those are the same principles, the same steps, the same practices that we instituted in a group home full of adolescent boys. And these were adolescent boys that were considered to be untreatable. They're the same principles. And, you know, Dr. Marcy, her specialization lies in that zero, that pre-birth to 7 to 8, 9, 10-year-old child, but it doesn't change.
No.
I could sing, as you said that, I could sing the same song to a 18-year-old, 6'3", 220-pound male and redirect him in the same way.
Right, because here is a basic principle that we never stop needing what we didn't get when we needed it.
That's right. Absolutely.
And so a child who didn't have that rhythm, who didn't have that consistency, who didn't have those very clear boundaries and that loving, calm authority at 3 and 4 and 5, if they didn't have it, there's like this, I love it's a phrase from Hakomi Bodywork. It's called missing experience. And that missing experience persists, and they're always going to be just, when they get it, it will be like a balm to that piece of them that's been waiting to kind of grow up.
Absolutely.
And another mantra that I love comes from Kim Jong Payne, which also it goes right along with this. And it is appropriate for the older child, an adolescent and teen, and Kevin, by the way. Start small, stay close, and follow through.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. Okay, Doc. I have one particular question here that came in. Liam Barb, you know, if you guys want to push *6, it'll be fine. So I think there's been so much information here, but I'm not going to read your whole question. The part of your question that I want to get to, I want to address at the very beginning, is you mentioned that your son is becoming more violent as his stress is rising, and you said you need help not taking it personally when he's punching and slapping, but he needs you, and I assume this is probably Leah, he needs you to be indestructible, to be able to hit you as hard as he can and not hurt you. Because getting hurt enrages him. Because you getting hurt enrages him more. You said this is familiar to you from your relationship with your own mom. You needed her to be strong, no matter what hurtful things you said to her, and she wasn't. But you've never been hit, and you said that many people who were never hit shouldn't have children. The first thing I want to tell you is no, it's not okay for you to be hit. It's not okay for you to be hurt, punched, slapped, and he does. That's not what he does not need for you to be indestructible. He doesn't need, and it doesn't matter if you say that in when you get hurt, it enrages him more. What is enraging him underneath his becoming more enraged is his fear. See, it's his fear that probably more than anything that you're going to go away. And the reality is you've already gone away. Because by trying to be indestructible, what you're really doing is you're just dissociating. If your child is hitting and slapping you, you're not physically present. You're just shutting down. And then when you get hurt, it probably is just freaking him out even more. So then what you do is you shut this, you're trying to shut down even harder, and it's not okay. It's not okay for him to hurt you. Not only is it not okay, it's not necessary. See, you have the ability to be able to say to him, I'm not going to hurt you. And I am not going to let you hurt me. It's just not okay. See, you have to have that respect for yourself. And if at any time I've ever said to you, and I'm going to open your line up right here, Leah, Barb.
Yeah.
If at any point I've ever said to you that that's what you need to do, I apologize because that's not where you need to be.
No, you
and I
didn't
just feel
that.
Like, go ahead.
You didn't say that exactly.
Okay.
I guess once he's so dysregulated that he's hitting and punching, I figure I've blown it. I guess it's partly that I'm just feeling like such a failure at that point.
So what is it that you're supposed to be punished?
Well, but also
Wait a minute. I want you to answer that question. If you've blown it, does that mean you're supposed to be punished?
Probably, yeah. But I was never punished. You know, I was never hit. I was never punished.
That's okay. I understand that. But see, here's the thing. Just because you weren't ever hit, you were punished plenty. You had an emotionally absent parent. And by having an emotionally absent parent, sometimes it's better to be hit. Because at least you can feel. Okay, so what I want you to ask yourself, is it really okay that you're making your son, how old is Julian? He's like 7?
He's 8.
He's 8, okay. So you're making your 8-year-old son really in that dynamic, you're making him your parent. You're giving him the permission to punish you for not knowing what to do differently. And how is that going to feel when he's 16? Because, see, by the time he turns 16, he's not going to know any different. He's going to almost feel justified in his behavior. And this is at an unconscious level. See, at an unconscious level, he is being justified in his behavior right now. Imagine when he's 16 and all you can do is call the cops.
Okay, so now I have the fear of the future and... You're telling me what not to do. Is there something you can tell me to do?
What you have to do right now in the future is you've got to get clear. You've got to get clear about the fact that you deserve to be heard and you deserve to be felt as a child. That's the first thing you've got to do. See, that's that square one I was telling you. you got to get clear about the fact that, that you mattered, that you were important. Okay, because by not getting clear with that, where you're trying to get your feeling from your son abusing you, because that's essentially what it's what it is going to become.
Okay, you know, actually, I think I did matter. I mattered way too much, actually. I always got too much attention. But what I do feel, Julian is a lot like my mom, and I feel very guilty in my relationship to him because, you know, I always felt guilty about in my relationship to her. Like I should have been there to protect her from her sister when she was growing up.
So listen,
because I'm very much like her sister.
Leah.
I've always been the perpetrator. So there's
a lot of
guilt in my relationship to Julian.
Listen to me for a moment. See, when I say you mattered, what I'm actually speaking to is that you mattered as a child. You mattered. You deserve to be heard and felt as a child, not as a little adult. And so what you're saying is you matter too much. But what you're interpreting is that you mattering too much was that you matter too much as for the adults. You were there to serve a role for the adult, for the parent. You weren't there. You know, you didn't matter as a child.
Your needs didn't matter, I think, is what Brian is saying, your true needs.
Yes, absolutely. And so you're misinterpreting that you mattered too much, because what actually happened is your needs as a child didn't matter at all. You were made to feel like the parent, which in so many ways that's what you're doing to Julian right now, is you're making him the parent. You just said he's so much like your mom. See, here's really as simple as I can make it, Leah, what I want you to do is I just want you to write about the similarities between Julian and your mom right now. I want you to just write the similarities between the two of them. And then I want you to say to yourself, or I want you to write right above Julian's name, Julian is not my mom. And then, as Dr. Marcy said, I want you to meditate on that.
Yeah,
you,
Leah,
you
I got, have to say, I really hope you'll get my CD or the download. This is made for you.
It's perfect. She's going to get it. Absolutely. I already know she's going to get it. I already know. It's so big. It's such a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for growth for you and Julian. And then we start to think of Renata, and so much of Renata's challenges get mixed up in the same dynamics. You know, you said, you know, she's starting to control the tone. Well, it's the same dynamics. You know, as you and but see, you're saying as Julian is becoming stressed, the reality is you're becoming more stressed. And then where's Barb? What's happening with Barb? Barb's feeling more helpless. And then what's she doing? She's probably, you know, falling away, not knowing how to engage, how to support you.
Yeah.
Okay, so everyone's becoming more stressed.
Yeah, I could make a list of how Renata is like me, and I'm like my mom's sister who abused her, and
it's just. See, and that's, you know, again, that goes back to meditation. It goes back to the law of attraction. That's what you need to look at every single morning. That's what needs to be posted on the mirror in your bathroom. I mean, you need that. That has to become conscious. It has to become so conscious that it is unconscious. See, that's the other That's the other level of the law of attraction, that you focus on something so much that it becomes unconscious. And this is my fear. This is my worry. This is my concern for all of my parents, is that there's been so much fear and there's been so much stress over the years that your fear and your stress is unconscious.
It's a habit.
You know, and it's habit. It becomes habit. You see, that must be interrupted. You know, and that's the very essence. That's the very nature of healing trauma. The very essence and nature of healing trauma is taking something which is unconscious and making it more conscious. And as you make it more conscious, you make it so conscious that it reconditions your unconscious. And so it no longer has the same impact over you. Now, that's a hard process. I'm still in the midst of that from my own adoption history. So I fully understand and am aware of how hard that process is. And you're not there yet. Where you need to be is writing that up on your mirror in your bathroom, and you need to be spending 5 to 10 minutes every day, probably 3 times a day, reading that list and getting clear that your children are not your mom and they're not you. They're your children, and they look to you to be, as Marcy said, the leader.
Can I throw in one little thing? I know we're coming to the end. You know, the nature of healing trauma, I totally agree with what Brian said. And then there's another piece to it as well, you know, because we're talking a lot about how this has become habitual. And one of the realities is when you're trying to, you know, break a bad habit, let's say, always much harder to go in and just remove that habit without instead creating a new healthy habit. So it's kind of a dual track. It's, yes, becoming conscious of this, really becoming conscious of what the seeds of this are, but also at the same time, you can lay in healthy new behaviors that will help bring that process along.
Yes.
And, you know, and so, and I think you're off to a good start with what Brian said.
Start there, Leah. That you've got 4 weeks to just start there. You know, I'll send the recording probably in the morning. Yeah, 4 weeks to start there, and then I want to know where you're at that point. That's square one for you. Is starting right.
Okay, making this list of similarities.
Make the list and meditate on the list. Think about the list. Read the list 3 times a day. I started off, you know, in the morning, but I know you need more than that. You need it morning, afternoon, and evening. So you need to make the list so you can fold it up and put it in your pocket, and you can pull it out 3 times a day. And let me give you a little personal disclosure. There's a book called The Greatest Salesman in the World. And I'm telling
Og
you,
Mandino.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, Og Mandino. I'm telling you this because I want you to understand how committed to some of these things that I personally can be before I ask you to do them. In this book, It's 10 principles that he gives in the book, and you're supposed to write them 3 times a day for 30 days before you go on to the next one. And so basically you are writing, you know, for a whole year, and I did it. I did the whole book. I did all of them without fail, and when I failed, I started over. So I can get really committed to these things because I know how important they can be. And I'm telling you,
so when you say meditate on this, the meditation that I've been trying to learn, the kinds of meditation had to do with sort of taking a break from thinking. When you say meditate on these lists.
Read them. All I'm saying is read and think about them.
Okay.
Read them and think about.
And
okay.
Yes, if you want to bring in the meditation piece, which I agree, it is taking a break from thinking. You know, it's sort of developing mastery over your thoughts and putting your thought where you want it, which is usually on just your breath or maybe a word or a mantra or a candle flame, or, you know, can be many things. But there's also guided imagery, which is sort of the form of meditation that's on my CD. And you might find it really soothing and helpful. And it is guided, which sort of, you know, helps you into that meditative place.
Okay.
Okay. Start there.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing. Okay, you bet. We got one last question I had. Fanny had written in, and I want to be able to address that. And I think at so many levels we probably address that, but I had a specific thought. Fanny was talking about you'd really like to have my thoughts on how to help your son reduce his verbal abuse and his yelling, even though he apologizes after and he says that he's under stress or he has a lot on his shoulders that he doesn't want to talk to you about it. Okay, I get that. Here's what I want you to understand. I want you to grasp this. I want you to get this. You probably need to go back on the homepage, postinstitute.com. And remember, I want a reminder, parentingforpeace.com, right on the slider board at the top of Dr. Marcy's site, you'll see the invitation for her, the opportunity for her.
Calm Authority for Mothers.
Calm Authority for Mothers. Every mom.
Audio coaching.
It's an audio program. Go get it. So it's parentingforpeace.com. But on I'm going to remind Fanny, I know you know this. You probably got it in the 16-week program, postinstitute.com. You go, you get the Fear to Love video, the free 30-minute video where I talk about attitudes, feelings, and behaviors. Attitudes, feelings, and behaviors, the trauma triangle. Remember, you know, refresh yourself. Look at it again. What you're asking me, is your son who just came from residential, who you are trying to reestablish this relationship with, who's had all of these negative behaviors, he is being verbally abusive and he's yelling. Attitudes, feelings, and behaviors. If he's verbally abusing, which is, that term verbally abusive is ridiculous. It's only abusive if you feel that what he's saying is abusive. But I look at a kid, which is anyone under 18, and I look at most adults that way, it's only abusive if that's my perception, if that's my interpretation. And if that's my interpretation, then I really need to look at what my past experiences have been around those things. You know, I need to get clear about what my history is, because the reality is if you're saying really mean things to me, you're really scared and overwhelmed. That, it's as simple as that for me. Now, for you, it may be something different, so you really need to explore that. But if he's being verbal and he's yelling, guess where he's at? He's at feelings. He's not in behaviors. And he's closer to attitudes. So you actually don't want him to do anything but yell. You want him to be verbal. You want to say, thank you for telling me, son. Thank you for expressing yourself that way. Thank you for giving me your feelings, because I know that you could drop into your behaviors and you could run away from home and you could have sex with other kids and you could do drugs and you could drink alcohol and then you'll be back in residential. So thank you for being verbal. Thank you for yelling. I want more of it. Tell me more about how you feel, because I can handle it, because it's okay, because they're just words. They're just words. That's where I want you to be. That's when you give him permission to move out of his verbal and his yelling. That's when you give him permission to move out of his yelling up to his attitude. That's when he rolls his eyes. And Fanny, you better not in 3 months send me an email talking about, I don't like the fact that my son rolls his eyes at me. I better not ever see that email. Attitudes, feelings, behaviors. He's at feelings right now. The way you get him to attitudes is you encourage more feeling expression. that will keep him out of behaviors. And if he drops down into behaviors, encourage more feelings. It's that simple. If you need a reinforcer, watch the video again, but it's there. Bam, you got it. You're on the right track. Don't get so overwhelmed. Be clear about what you're coming from. Dr. Marcy, thank you so very much for joining us once again.
Oh, and, I always enjoy it.
It's always you bring such a nice flow and a nice spirit, a nice energy to everything that we're doing here. And I just want to let everyone know that I'm working on something very exciting with Dr. Marcy, and I'm just gonna tease you with that right now. But there's something coming. Many of you know that I'm closing out the Inner Circle. Actually, has been closed all year, so there have been no new Inner Circle members all year long. There may have been one or two that slipped through the cracks, but finding some link or something on the website, some on the internet somewhere, but otherwise, there haven't been any new people in the Inner Circle because I've kind of been winding it down. But I'm working on something exciting with Dr. Marcy, so you're all going to be privy to that in the next few weeks, next 30, 60 days. I'll be sharing it with you. So
can I add one very short thing to what you just said?
Absolutely.
What you said about attitudes, feelings, behaviors, and thank him and you know, you having to look at so often, I think when we want to parent in this more conscious way, we have to look at what our societal attitudes are, our cultural programming about what's okay for a child to say. And, you know, God forbid my neighbor would know that he's talking to me like this and I'm not, you know, teaching him what for, you know. I mean, and really the bottom line about taking things personally, what I say to my parents is grow bigger shoulders.
There
just grow bigger shoulders. Become that big oak tree that your kids can swing off the branches of and run around and maybe even carve their initials in, and you're just there. And I know that flies in the face of a lot of, you know, conventional parenting practice and the idea of what's misbehavior and what's good behavior. But if we keep our eye on the prize of keeping our kids in growth mode, then we grow bigger shoulders.
There you go. All right, everyone. God bless you. I love you. And just keep hanging in there. Keep choosing love at every possible moment. I'll make sure to get this audio recording to you just as soon as possible. And we will talk to you next month.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.